Welcome to the 220th episode of the Jamie Delaney Plant-Based Wellness Podcast. My name is Jamie Delaney, and I'm your host. I'm a plant-based cardiologist and endurance athlete living in Southwest Florida. Recently, I attended the International Conference on Nutrition and Medicine at Washington, D.C., and I was joined by my favorite dietitian and partner in crime, Addie Delaney Meinertz, and she is here today to join me to talk about it. So welcome, Addie.
Hello, everyone. Hey, Doc.
How you doing this afternoon?
Good. Can't complain. We had a really good time at that conference.
Yes, we did. And today is August the 5th, and we're day five into the August birthday month wellness challenge, and things are going great. People are posting right and left.
Yes, first day for those movement minute check-ins is today, so every Monday, and we're seeing a lot of different activities from CrossFit to yoga to Zumba to running to biking, so it's really cool to see all the things that people are doing to celebrate movement and their health this month with us.
Yeah, so that's great. So still not too late to join. If you'd like to join in our wellness challenge, you can hop on over to drdelaney.com, drdelaney.com. Click over to the resources page and sign up, and we'll send you a shirt with a logo on it, and you can log your movement every Monday.
Yes, so join in on the fun.
And there's a great video up on the website that Addie did as well, so all the nitty-gritty is there, so join in the fun. Everybody is really getting active. We're seeing people from all over the country and on vacation and everything else, so it's great.
Yeah.
So back to the conference in Washington, D.C. It was great. I guess the start of it all was getting to back together with my best friend from college and medical school, Crystal Williston, and her husband, Bill, who joined us there. Crystal is a neurosurgeon in Harrisonburg, Virginia, and she called me up several months ago and said that her cholesterol was starting to go up and what should she do about it. And we talked about plant-based nutrition, and she and her husband, Bill, have a big garden, and they grow a lot and can a lot, and so it wasn't a very hard jump to go plant-based and start their transitioning, and so they decided to join us at the conference to learn more, and it was really, really great since 1985 that I've sat beside my med school pal. So it was really funny to have a neurosurgeon who was, everything's fixed with a scalpel, and a cardiologist that most things are fixed with a catheter, joined to learn how to fix things with a spatula.
Yes, no, I think they really enjoyed it, and she even went back and kind of already started digging into her own community and talking to people about plant-based nutrition and helping optimize their health with their fork.
Yes, and you know, when people travel, they often get bent out of shape a little bit about where they're going to eat and what kind of food they're going to eat, and we had wonderful food. The conference itself provided breakfast and lunch, which was great. Lots of flavors, different ethnic foods to try. It was just really good, filling, well-organized. I can't say enough about the food at the conference. I thought they did a fabulous job. But we also walked miles every day. It was pretty good. I think we averaged like 15,000 steps, even though we spent 7 or 8 hours in a conference. We ran before and ran around our monuments that we always like to walk, run around, and then we walked to restaurants, and my favorite was Flower Chow. Some great different spices and sauces put together.
Yes, no, I think we were even talking how just within a year, the expansion in not just, vegan restaurants, but, advertised as plant-based whole food restaurants, but a lot of restaurants with vegan options or completely vegan restaurants that have popped up over the D.C. area just since last year, and we had great food. We never had a bad meal the whole time we were there.
No, it was really, really good. So, we used Happy Cow, you can go on just local restaurant. You can just Google in local vegan restaurants and pull up menus, so it's really, really easy, and then just Google map it into walking. So we enjoyed walking around our 4 or 5 mile radius every day, So we got our steps in and got good food.
Yeah, definitely. A nice variety of food, too, I thought. That was everything.
So let's get into the conference. We'll certainly not hit everything, but certainly some highlights. You know, a lot of great things, learned some good things. Probably, you know, it's always good to get reinforced what we're doing in our practice, I believe, is cutting edge as far as wellness and lifestyle reversing diseases. And but it was nice to get reinforcement by some of the basic science behind plant-based nutrition. The first speaker was a cardiologist from Harvard, Paul Ridker. And, you know, like most academic physicians, you know, and big universities, there was a lot of backing by big pharma. Most of the people had a pretty good list of who they have, who they are currently working. But he presented a very nice talk on the role of inflammation in cardiovascular disease. And, you know, often people, you know, we hear people say, well, my cholesterol wasn't that high and I had a heart attack. Or the doctor told me my good cholesterol was very high and I need not worry and I had a heart attack. And that's all true. I think cholesterol is more like a marker in some respects in that, you know, your body can absorb so much and then it's out in your bloodstream. But one of the things, you know, some people don't have that high of cholesterol, but they have a lot of inflammation. And inflammation largely comes from your nutrition. So tracking a C-reactive protein is a very good inflammatory marker. And he talked about being a man that's most of his studies involve pharmaceuticals, you know, how anti-inflammatory medications, specifically, more of a marker or a medication to decreased immunity showed a decreased level in CRP, and they had decreased cardiovascular events. And, you know, they're working on a medication that doesn't have side effects and doesn't do other things. But we all know that if you take a medicine for one thing, there often does other things. And so there's, you know, there's good things and bad things come out of it. And of course, the part that he said that made us all stand on edge was that, you know, plant-based nutrition is good, but it's just really hard to do. And for his own mental health, he kind of needed a steak once in a while. So, you know, I was glad he was honest about that. But and he admitted that plant-based nutrition would probably, you know, go a long way to decrease this inflammatory state.
And we know that that's more than probably. We see it every day. And I just thought it was very interesting how he said, you know, lipid lowering can take years to reduce that mortality risk. But, you know, that inflammation reduction is much more, you know, improved. You see bigger improvements for that fast reduction. Inflammation fuels genetic damage. I think that was a really key point within his whole talk.
Yeah, and you know, when you eat, say, let's pick on salmon a little bit. You know, somebody says, well, I eat salmon because it has omega-3 fatty acids. But foods are just that. They're foods. They're not isolated macro, micronutrients. Not, you know, they come with a whole load of other ingredients. So, you know, with salmon comes not only omega-3s, but comes saturated fat and cholesterol and PCBs and dioxins and mercuries. And so you have all that to deal with instead of just, you know, an isolated, you know, in quotes, good fat. And the other thing we see is that, you know, the same risk factors for cardiovascular disease are the same risk factors for multiple sclerosis and rheumatoid arthritis and Crohn's disease. These are inflammatory conditions that are fueled by nutrition, dairy products and oils and things. So if you take the dairy and the animal proteins out of the diet, then this inflammation and these diseases go away. So why wouldn't it go away with cardiovascular disease? And you know, by all means, what's the downside? What's the downside to eating a plant-based diet? There are absolutely no risks. There's no disclaimer on the bottom that says, you know, eating broccoli and cauliflower might increase your risk of cancer. It doesn't happen. So, you know, it's great to know that we're certainly on the right track here with plant-based nutrition.
Yeah, I think, you know, too, even if you're on cholesterol medication, I think this further hones in the fact that that doesn't give you a free pass to continue to eat whatever you'd like, because that's only looking at your cholesterol, the medication. It's not touching the inflammation. So if we're kind of adding additional inflammation and we see that a huge chunk of heart attacks are inflammation related, maybe even before you even see a high cholesterol, it just shows furthermore how the food can either help or hurt you. So, you know, whether you're taking the medication route or you're with us and we're getting you off that, you know, really focus in on that food as well as a way to help additionally improve your health.
Yeah, absolutely. And it, again, you know, we're going to keep saying it over and over again, but it puts the patient back in control of their own health, not dependent on a medication or pharmaceutical. The next talk was Dr. Gerald Shulman from Yale University, and he gave a great talk about adult onset diabetes and the why. And, you know, we talk about, and everybody knows for the most part that's probably listening to this podcast that, you know, adult onset diabetes, it's not a problem of too much sugar or too many carbohydrates. It's a problem of too much fat. And his research was able to document that where in the cell, where in the muscle cell, where in the liver cell is the problem. And it turns out that the biggest problem is right in the uptake, right in the beginning. The fat blocks the glucose transport, both in the fat and the liver. And, you know, that's where we have to focus on getting the fat out of the cells. And virtually every person with adult onset diabetes has too much fat in their liver and their muscle. So, you know, the way about that is changing the diet and increasing and upping the exercise.
Yes, and I think what I found to be very interesting was when he started talking about even seeing the insulin resistance in folks with a BMI around 24 or 25, so either just on the upper end of that normal BMI range or on the low end of overweight in Asian populations, and that further looked at, okay, then taking it a step further, it's a body composition issue. So, you know, physical activity is important here as well. Strength training, any kind of weight-bearing activity, building that muscle mass and decreasing that fat mass for a positive body composition change is going to be even, you know, more crucial for reversing diabetes and prevention of it. Because again, we're getting that fat out of the muscle cell, and we're going to get the fat out of your diet, the excess fat, the animal fat, while you work with us or wherever you're starting your plant-based journey, and that's further going to help with this disease reversal that is yet another disease linked to inflammation.
All right. And, you know, by exercising, you're increasing the mitochondria and the mitochondrial function. And, you know, that's helping on a cellular level to, you know, reverse diseases. And, you know, one of the things that was said that, again, you know, we were astonished to hear and know all too different is that, well, it's hard to get people to move and to exercise. And, you know, I think that it's hard to get people to change their diet and to exercise when you tell them in a, you know, in a handout or in a 2-minute discussion, you need to eat better and exercise, because that's like, you know, such a blanket statement of, well, of course, everybody knows they should eat well and exercise, but what should they eat and what kind of exercise should they do? And that's where we're able to take time with people and to, you know, have these wellness challenges. We have a wellness challenge every month in the practice. And so that's why we're kind of have celebrating with anybody that wants to celebrate with us this month. That it is so important to move every day, so important to exercise and get your heart rate up, and so important to, you know, eat in a way that prevents these diseases.
Yes, no limit. We don't like to limit people. We like to put all of your options out there and put you back in the driver's seat of your health.
Yeah. And then, you know, Kit Falk Peterson was another presenter and talked about, you know, even though the brain function and the ability of mitochondrial in the neurons with diabetes. So, you know, it's not only a problem with the muscle, skeletal muscle and liver, but, you know, diabetes affects neuron function and you know, again, increases the risk of dementia. So you know, this is not a benign disease. You know, what and whether you're glucose intolerant or borderline diabetic or have full blown adult on diabetes, these down the road risk factors are all there, and you know, are going to be there, and you have the same risk of cardiovascular disease as full blown diabetes. So this needs to be addressed now.
Yes.
And then, you know, the other takeaway that I, you know, giving, you know, I always give the talk that I have terrible genes. My mother has terrible genes. My grandmother died at 56 of diabetes and heart failure. My grandfather died of heart disease. Diabetes is everywhere in the family. So I, you know, I know that if I were to have genetic testing that I, you know, that, yes, I have a, you know, I have, you know, a predilection to get diabetes. But the idea is that, you know, they were able to present in information that, you know, just by exercising, you can decrease and improve glycogen storage in the children or offspring of diabetics. And that's huge. Just a single bout of exercise increases the glycogen synthesis. So, you know, the idea is that your liver and your muscles are either going to burn glucose for energy or we're going to store it. And it tends to be a storage problem because the glucose can't get in. So just exercising is going to burn this off enough to let this glycogen storage improve. And, you know, you can really fend off diabetes even if you have a strong family history.
Yes, or you can succumb to the 40% risk that you get with just a parent having type 2 diabetes. Your risk is up to 40%, so you again can be in the driver's seat.
Yeah, and you know, if we look at the mechanism again, you know, if you have fat in the muscle cells and the liver cells, then basically your body's putting out a lot of extra insulin to try to drive the glucose into the cell. And that, if you think about where the liver sits in proximity to the pancreas, it's right there. So the liver sees a tremendous amount of insulin. So it is really affected early on with this high insulin levels, you know, seen with people with insulin resistance. So, you know, that's, again, plant-based nutrition to try to get a handle on this. One of my favorite lectures, Sean Heshmi, on kidney disease. I thought that his lecture was excellent. More people die of kidney disease than breast cancer and prostate cancer combined. Yet, you know, people can't feel their kidney disease coming on until they've lost greater than 50% of their kidney function.
Yeah, and 14% of the population has kidney disease. And that, you know, again, these conditions we're talking about earlier, diabetes and hypertension, are the leading reasons why people are developing chronic kidney disease later in life with, you know, instead of reversing those, letting them further continue and then developing yet another disease that we think we can just kind of mask by, oh, dialysis. But, you know, I thought it was astonishing. 1 in 5 people a year die while they're on dialysis.
Yep, it's not a pleasant thing. Typically, dialysis is 3 days a week for about 4 hours. Some people do dialysis at home overnight, peritoneal dialysis. But typically, the day after dialysis, people are left washed out, very fatigued, nauseated, dizzy. And so they recover just in time to get dialysis again. So it's not really the lifestyle that you want. And the other thing that happens is that most people with end-stage renal disease end up dying of cardiovascular disease because you can't clear the calcium that you're taking in. You know, we always worry about, you know, or people ask you, where are you going to get your calcium? The question in renal disease is, what are you going to do with your calcium? Because you can't really regulate it very well, and so you're not getting rid of it through the urine. You're not getting rid of the excess through the stool. It's being deposited in the tissues. And if it's deposited in your heart valve, then that leads to valvular heart disease and, you know, and coronaries, the coronary artery disease, brain, dementia. So, you know, this calcium that we think that we need a lot of actually becomes very dangerous, as does phosphorus. in the setting of kidney disease. And, you know, like we said, the two biggest risks for kidney disease is hypertension and diabetes. And diabetes or in hypertension, you know, one of the biggest problems is sodium. And so for every gram in excess of salt that people want, you have a 26% increased risk in kidney disease. And just, you know, by dropping your sodium intake, you can improve your kidney function. When you start to think about fast foods and prepared foods, you know, people can get 7-8 grams of salt a day.
Yeah, it adds up quite quickly. I also really appreciated how he spoke about, you know, a lot of the times when I have a patient who has gone to a nephrologist or a renal dietitian prior to coming to me, you know, they talk about, oh, they said, I can't do any of these vegetables or can't do any of these beans or these fruits. You know, we need to be afraid of, you know, collection of phosphorus or calcium or potassium. And so we restrict these foods. And really, I love how you went into detail about really why you can eat a whole food plant-based diet and why you should eat a whole food plant-based diet while on either dialysis or not even further into your chronic kidney disease to help reverse and heal your body. And how we can just adjust maybe medication or even just adjust your intake slightly, try different cooking methods, things of that nature like we do with our patients, and let these foods be a part of their daily intake to help heal their body.
Yeah, and just changing from animal foods to plant-based foods can lower your absorption of calcium and phosphorus because they're not phosphorus is not nearly readily available. But actually, you know, an increased phosphorus is associated with increased 18% increased risk in death with people with renal insufficiency. And the biggest source is processed food, 80 to 100, you know, cheese and pre-cooked meats and pre-cooked boxed foods. And one of the biggest things are soda. You know, people think that that diet soda is not going to do them so much harm. But in reality, you can really increase your risk of retaining phosphorus and end-stage renal disease by having soda.
Yep, the inorganic phosphate.
So less than one glass a week versus 7 glasses, greater than 7 glasses a week, associated with 83% change in 83% increased risk in renal insufficiency. So, you know, it's not, and it also leads to more calorie intake. You know, so the artificial sweeteners fool your microbes, most likely, you know, increasing food cravings, increasing calorie extraction. So, you know, again. You know, increasing your risk of diabetes, again, increasing your risk of kidney disease. And so, it goes on and on. And then if you look at plant protein versus animal protein, you know, plant protein is much, much better tolerated. You know, so a low protein diet of plant-based is much safer than animal protein, decreasing, you know, uric acid and such that, you know, we don't have any problems with our renal patients other than the fact that their kidney function gets better.
Yeah, and I like how we talked about plant-based protein in general for even the healthy population and a lot of push with protein powders and supplements, especially from animal sources like whey, and how we talked about, you know, long term, you know, as a protein source, soy protein is remarkably more beneficial. You know, we have to excrete excess protein. We cannot absorb excess protein beyond our needs. So our kidneys are the ones that filter out that excess nitrogen waste. And with these high protein diets that are pushed right now with young adults and in gyms and things like that, far beyond our needs, we're seeing more and more unhealthy kidneys in younger populations. And so I think it was crucial that he was talking about, you know, our actual need and preserving kidney health through just meeting your need with protein, choosing natural whole food sources, and also pushing fiber. You know, fiber is always good in helping with improved metabolism of the foods that you're eating, slowing that down and allowing the kidneys to filter things at a more optimal rate. And then kind of talked into the paleo diet as well as we go in further into the conference. That was a topic. But he talked, you know, too about, you know, in reality, not they, if we focus now on the paleo diet on the protein. Oh, yes, they had high protein, much higher than we do now. Well, no, we know that that's not true. And they had incredibly, you know, Paleolithic diets had much, much higher fiber intake, about 80 to 100 grams of fiber per day versus the current commercially promoted paleo diet, which is only at 10 to 15 grams of fiber a day. So, you know, trying to check those facts too on the fad diet and get back to the whole foods as much as you can.
Yeah, I mean, the traditional paleo diet or the paleolithic type diet was the occasional animal protein, but mainly based on a high fiber diet of tubers and fruits and things of that nature. So, yeah, that was good. And, you know, transitioning into one of my favorite lectures by Dr. Mark Messina about soybeans and the isoflavones associated with them. You know, 40 milligrams a day is 40 milligrams per day is great. One cup of soy milk, 25 grams. Most of that genistein is 50%, and datazine is 40% of the soy, the isoflavones found in soy products. And you know, people are worried about, well, these are estrogen-like. Well, they're actually anti-estrogen. The beta receptor is anti-proliferative, meaning it prevents binding of estrogen and proliferation of cells that we don't want, such as breast cancer cells and prostate cancer cells. So, you know, people that take in soy, the Asians, you know, about a third of the risk of breast cancers as Americans.
Yes, and I thought, you know, biggest takeaway of the whole day and this whole speech was on the critical need to get the dairy out and get the soy actually in the diets of our youth, and how the protective benefits really start with regular intake of soy in adolescence and in elementary school children. And then, again, another benefit into teenage years, but how we see within those Asian populations that soy intake early on really dramatically decreasing risk of breast cancer. But then we do see that a high dairy intake, which we have in this country, linking more and more to a higher incidence of breast cancer.
Yeah. So, you know, again and again and again, you know, I think that it's terrible when this got milk campaign and drink milk after exercise, and it's the great recovery drink backed by science, it's backed by the dairy industry, is what it's backed by. And that if you really want to protect your daughters, nieces, granddaughters from breast cancer, get them on soy milk now. Get them off dairy now. You know, there's evidence that decreasing dairy intake will decrease risk of prostate cancer later on, obviously decrease acne, you know, so it just do it. You know, people will get over it. And I think that if you, you know, you talk to young girls about this early on, I don't think they'll have a problem with it. You know, people get worried about tofu and tempeh and soy milk and say that they're processed. Well, you know, is soy milk, to make soy milk, you just have to boil soybeans and, you know, and basically extract the skin and, you know, and put them in a blender and then, you know, boil them up again and you're there. So it's, you know, it's not much processing, and you get a whole lot of good benefits. Obviously you can buy soy milk, you know, and I try to buy soy milk that's soybeans and water. I stay as away from as many additives as I possibly can, even though some of the guar gums and other thickeners may not be harmful. My body's not used to handling those things, you know, that we weren't made. That's not a whole food. So when you're talking about those additives to kind of fake thickening things, then, you know, I try to stay away from that. But, you know, even in, you know, menopausal symptoms, serving two of soy a day can decrease hot flash symptoms. In the breast cancer population, there's a decreased risk of death when people consume soy, 16% decrease in mortality in the meta-analysis. 27% decreased secondary events. So, you know, there's no bad thing about it. And you were talking about, you know, even thyroid, it's not an issue as well.
No, yeah. So, I mean, one of the biggest, you know, things people are pushing is, oh, you can't have soy if you're on thyroid medication. Well, we know that, and they said here within studies they've seen that really that's not the case. You just want to space it out. But with most thyroid medication, you're not supposed to eat right after consuming the medicine anyway. So, you know, a few hours later, having some soy at opposite end of the day from your medication, having some soy in your diet, absolutely nothing wrong with it. Will not interfere with your medication. It will be beneficial for your health and lowering disease risk.
Yep. And 4 servings of soy a day has also been associated with improving depression symptoms. Equal that to serotonin reuptake inhibitors. It's been shown to decrease cholesterol. So, you know, obviously if you're eating soy, you're not eating a cheeseburger. So it's going to help decrease cholesterol. So there's really no reason to avoid soy products. But I would, you know, when you're talking about genetically modified soy, that is in soy that's added to processed food. So things that, you know, are breaded processed foods that, you know, have a breading on them or a thickening agent or soybean oil. Those are the things you want to stay away from. But, you know, soy as far as tempeh, tofu, soybeans, edamame, you know, those are fabulous.
Well, and most of the genetically modified soy is actually for feeding livestock. So people who still consume meat, you're eating genetically modified soy because you're eating the livestock. And the chickens and things of that nature. So as long as you're choosing organic, which is actually very difficult to find non-organic tofu or non-GMO tofu or soy milk, it's very hard, then you're completely fine. Organic, you're good to go.
Yeah, and there was a lot of, you know, just kind of a side note, the movie The Game Changers is coming out September 16th. So if you haven't looked in your town where you are for a screening, do so. We're having a screening here in Port Charlotte. It's going to be at 7:30 on September the 16th. If you're listening in town, go get your tickets now. But, you know, there was a presentation on, you know, plant-based diet and athletic performance. You know, we've got Wimbledon champions, UFC fighters, race car drivers, football players. You know, as far as strength goes, if you look at meta-analysis, there's no decrease in strength, and actually can build muscle just as easy with soy protein as you can whey protein. There's no reason to not do things naturally. We don't have to, you know, push in meat. That's just going to make it harder on those athletes later on, and we kind of already hit on the, you know, the possibility of hypertension and renal failure in these people.
Yes. Yes. And I think, you know, overall, we had the majority, and we have one more of our favorite lecture to talk about. But I will say it was a little frustrating. We'll talk about the negative just here for a second. And people were wishy-washy on their messages during some of the lectures.
Yeah, you know, in Washington, D.C., in the attempts to be politically correct, I guess, mainstream science with the standard being placebo-controlled trials with 100% of the evidence showing definitively that plant-based nutrition is the only way to go. You know, I mean, do we have that? No. We don't. We have a lot of good, strong studies showing reversal of cardiovascular disease and decreasing incidences of cancer and decreasing incidence of recurrence. But these are nutrition studies, and just like we talked before, nutrition studies—it's not single nutrients, and dietary histories are difficult. And frankly, it wouldn't be ethically sound to give somebody a high meat, high fat diet versus a plant diet, knowing full well that you're probably harming someone and causing, you know, inflammation. So, you know, the same scientific studies are not there for nutrition as there are for a medication that, you know, is you give somebody a medication or you don't give somebody a medication. So a lot of the guidelines are you know, nutrition is held at the same standard, so therefore it's left out, that it, you know, it may benefit people, but people say that, you know, nobody's saying it hurts. You know, like there's nothing out there that says a plant-based diet will hurt anybody. There's a lot of evidence saying that, yes, it's going to help. And so there's no downside as there would be, you know, a medication trial, yet people are afraid to, you know, put it out there for fear that they might be wrong or somebody might not do it. So the fear, you know, of not promoting this is, yeah, it got a little bit overwhelming that, you know, it probably does, but we really can't say with 100% certainty. Well, we can't say anything with 100% certainty with any pharmaceutical treatment either. And Lord knows, you know, the way some of the studies are designed that we're finding, you know, 2 or 3 years later after a drug comes out, then we find all the side effects of the medication. And things are pulled, black box warnings are added. So, you know, I think we need to get a hold of ourselves, and especially in a forum like this, that, you know, hey, this plant-based nutrition really, you know, will help your patients, and the you know, the potential for harm is nil. Although I did have a patient get broccoli stuck in their esophagus once. They had esophageal stricture, and they got broccoli stuck in. They had to go to the emergency room. So, you know, I guess there are risks with broccoli. You need to chew it.
But the woman of the hour, she brought it all together. Brenda Davis, registered dietitian. I can't even say enough. It was my favorite lecture of the whole weekend.
It was everybody's favorite lecture of the whole weekend. She was the only one that got 100%.
Yelling,
screaming, standing ovation because she got up and said it like it was. And, you know, you don't have to eat animals, and it's not good for the environment, it's not good for the animals, and it's not good for the human, was the overall final sentence takeaway. So Brenda Davis, the main topic that she discussed was a ketogenic diet versus a paleo diet versus a plant-based diet. And she did a very good job explaining, you know, a ketogenic diet is less than, equal to or less than 5% carbohydrates. That is not very many grams of carbohydrate in a day. And a paleo is about 20% carbohydrates. You know, there is a risk of these diets with cardiovascular disease, malnutrition, stunted growth, metabolic acidosis leading to kidney disease, blood disorders, you know, long-term muscle issues, fatty liver, insulin resistance, you know, so the list just goes on. And overall, 35% increased risk in cancer in these patients on a long-term ketogenic or paleo diet.
Yes, and she went into detail looking at the studies and how, you know, short-term, yes, with ketogenic, you may have a little bit of weight loss, but long-term, you're seeing absolutely no benefit in insulin resistance, hemoglobin A1C, blood lipid levels that you do with a plant-based diet. Long-term benefits far outweigh the quick fix that is not even a true fix. It's a little bit of a faux improvement in maybe some blood glucose people may have noted or in quick weight loss. But long-term negative health effects are happening with these high-fat, low-carbohydrate diets. How most of our cells rely on glucose for energy systems. And when we're depriving that, we're depriving a state of ketosis that we try to avoid with our diabetic patients.
Yeah, it, you know, it's a short-term gain that you can, you know, get with virtually anything as far as weight loss. It's not about short-term, it's about the long-term and how do we you know, how do we maintain health and longevity over time? And one of the biggest things missing in a ketogenic and paleo diet is fiber. You know, in a ketogenic especially, you know, it can be much less than 10 grams of fiber a day when we want people to get 50 to 70 grams of fiber a day for colon health and in cardiovascular health. So, you know, there, which we, you know, not only results in constipation, but a state of inflammation associated with it.
Yeah, kind of tying it back to what we started here, and it's like, you know, when you take out the plants, You take out the colorful foods, fruits, and vegetables that are restricted with something like a ketogenic diet. I mean, you're only eating the inflammatory causing foods, these meats and cheeses, which are allowed on a ketogenic diet. And so you're just packing yourself with additional inflammation. That is why people get things like the ketogenic flu, and they start to feel, you know, just awful later on in eating this way, and it's not sustainable.
And it's what comes with it, you know, the heavy metals associated with animal protein, especially factory farm raised, you know, animals, and the contaminants, dioxins, PCBs in the fish population. You know, so you're not just eating protein, you're just not eating fat, but you're eating other toxins and increasing the oxidative stress in your body. And so your body has to deal with these things. You know, what are you, you know, where are you putting this excess stuff that goes into your fat? Toxins are stored in the fat of an animal. We're animals. So if you eat an animal that was exposed to toxins, it's in their fat, you're eating the fatty animal, you're getting that, you're going to store it into your fat. And, you know, I've yet to, you know, see, there are, I mean, there are people that, you know, some bodybuilders that starve their way down to a low body fat, but it certainly doesn't last for any time. And, you know, where do these, you know, the bone marrow, there's lots of places, the brain, for these toxins to be stored. So you can say, well, you know, I don't have, you know, I stay lean and trim, so I don't have a big fat mass. You have enough fat mass to store these toxins. And maybe it's even worse because that's, you know, you're predominantly storing these toxins, so they're readily accessible.
Yes. So it's like, what are you choosing to expose yourself to just for a quick, quote unquote, fix, which we know really isn't a fix at all.
So overall, you know, we were, you know, very pleased in what we're doing in our practice. You know, one of the things that I did not like about the conference was the panel discussion on how you might run a plant-based practice. And unfortunately, they did not present how you would do this in the real world. Yes, in academic institutions or where people are on salary, their income doesn't depend on turning the lights on and paying for malpractice, that, you know, people can do some plant-based nutrition classes. But how do you put this into real practice on a daily basis? You know, how do you tell the internists on how not to see 40 or 50 patients a day? And that's what we're doing here. And, you know, I'll be presenting at the concierge conference in September, hopefully, you know, to educate some doctors on how they can implement plant-based nutrition in their practice, because that's what really needs to happen. Every practice needs to have a registered dietitian to help educate people, not just give them a handout, but to educate the people on the how and the why of plant-based nutrition and help them to implement it. And, you know, like you do, and you have a webinar on our, you know, our members only site, is, you know, turn the plate a little bit. If you're looking at inflammation or cancer or post-surgical or weightlifting or in athletics, we emphasize turning that plant-based plate a little bit, that, you know, one way or another, to make and allow people to achieve their goals. And that takes time, and it's not in a setting where you're seeing 50 people a day and, you know, just trying to fill prescriptions. So, you know, there's a lot of education. There's stuff out there that people are starting to educate the population. You know, Dr. Saray Stanzik with Code Blue and things, or they're starting to get into medical schools to educate people. But we have to really, you know, take the bull by the horns and, you know, get away from this prescription pad test ordering mentality.
Yes. Yes, getting back to what can truly help, which is the food that people are putting in their bodies or the foods they're choosing not to.
And moving. So I'm glad that, you know, we're doing a lot of movement. So if you haven't signed up for our August birthday month challenge, we'd like to hear from you. We're meeting a lot of new people as they're posting onto the Jamila Delaney website. And, you know, in case you don't know it, we're doing a lot of book signings. We'll be October 21st. I'll be at my local bookstore here in Punta Gorda. And then I'll be down at Naples at their Green Scene, which is a vegan meetup group, to do a book signing. But hop on over to Amazon and get your plant-based wellness cookbook, Three Generations of Cooking, The Doctor, The Dietitian, and The Diva. So we'd like to have you look at that. The recipes that are simple, the recipes that our family likes, that the nutrition class likes, that are nutritious and delicious and easy to make.
Yes, and I'll be here at the local Sprouts doing some food demos with, easy ingredients you can pick up there and some book signings here as well. So multiple places to meet one of the Delaneys.
Here and here for you is Houston.
Yes.
In case they can't see you in the big state of Texas. So it's all good. We had a great conference and we'll keep at it. And if you all have any questions, please hop on over to info@drdelaney.com or Jamie or Addie at drdelaney.com. We'd love to hear from you. Keep doing what you're doing. Keep posting your exercise minutes, your movement minutes. And keep eating plant strong.
And happy early birthday to our doc.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome. Can't wait to see how you all continue to move for the rest of the month.
Yep, because I'm posting my challenges too, because I am right in the thick of things with Ironman Chattanooga training, so that'll be into September. And then Addie, you have a half marathon in the fall?
Yeah, October, Houston half in October, and then the Houston full in January. So we are in the thick of it.
Yes, so come join us. So one of these marathons, Eddie will be running. We'll be in Houston as well. I'll be running the Austin Marathon. We'll be doing the Sacramento, California International Marathon. So look us up, follow with us, and get your movement on, get your Plant Strong movement on. All right, have a good week.
Have a good week, everyone.
Thank you.